Hey guys, it's Scott Brennan here, and you're listening to episode 145 of the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, and it's one of our favorites. Now, I want to bring you our sponsors real quick that help make this possible. Local businesses, entrepreneurs, small business, this is what we love to support. Now, Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, one of my favorite breweries to visit. You know, they got seasonally inspired ales all the time. This week, they got the Highlands Hopped Up Pub Crawl and Scavenger Hunt coming up, which, according to me, is like you're going to look for things and drink beer and have fun with your friends. They always have new beers. Go visit Joe Fisher in his Manskirt. Visit them at www.manskirtbrewing.com. Check them out on Facebook and Instagram. Now, Tom Zuber and his crew at Demented Brewing in Middlesex, New Jersey, which now you're going down towards central New Jersey. They got 16 taps all the time, rotating taps, barrel programs, sour programs, a lot of really cool things. Sundays they release beers. Last Sunday they released Voodoo, Lemon Drop IPA. This Sunday they're going to be releasing Villa, their Belgian wit. And now they have a mystery double can release coming up on Monday, May 8th. Two cans being released on May 8th. So that is exciting. Give them some love on Facebook and Instagram. Now, this Saturday, I was just at my favorite brewery to visit outside of New Jersey, which is Adirondack Brewery. And I couldn't be happier with their support and love. And, you know, to have them aboard the podcast is really cool. That we were drinking the Shapeshifter IPA. Unbelievable. Now, it's Albany Craft Beer Week. Okay, so they're going to be doing Night at the Brewseum, okay, in Congress Park in Saratoga Springs. They're going to be doing the Albany Beer Festival, which is April 22nd, 1 to 4 o'clock. The most insane VIP beer experience Albany has ever seen. Lots of breweries, all different things to choose, but you get a really good chance to try a lot of Adirondack beer. Now, they have a lot of specials coming out this week, including the pickled onion burger, 8-ounce brewery burger, slightly seasoned and grilled to perfection, then topped with gorgonzola horseradish sauce and pickled onions on a brioche bun. I mean, if that doesn't sound good, I don't really know what's wrong with you. And Susan Robb is a name that you may have heard on the podcast recently. One, she helps sponsor the podcast, but she also is a big supporter of the podcast, helps us get some amazing guests, and we're very happy to support some of the things she has coming up. Now, she is a speaker agent to people, like 5, 6, 7 different speakers in North America and Canada and America, and I know that's all lumped into one big continent. But now, she helps to represent Paul Templer, who is one of our favorite guests that we have ever had on the show for a lot of reasons, but most of all because a lot of the work he does. Now, he is the founder of an organization called Aaron's Light that they need sponsorship, and they really help kids in third world countries live and die with dignity, kids with special needs. And a really good cause. I mean, in April, he just stayed and worked with Yazzie Ginsberg, who ended up in the rainforest alone for a month. He recently went to Nepal with another survivor and was interviewed by the Dalai Lama while going up Mount Everest. I mean, we would like the Dalai Lama on the podcast, but we'll see how that goes. But listen, if they don't get the donations, they can't really go forward with the project. And they need some help. It's a very charitable, noble cause. So, for donations and to find out more, please email susan@paultemplar.com. All right. We have a really interesting podcast for you today. We have Chris Ballew of the President of the United States of America. Lump Peaches, you remember that? We got Obie's here. He also goes by the name of Casper Baby Pants, makes kids music, makes music for parents. Really, really, really good interview. So we were very excited to have him on. And then we have Mike Holstein of the Green Bank Radio Observatory on. And I can really only explain that if you like science and you like to hear about some interesting things going on in this country, this is for you. With that, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Chris Ballew, lead singer of the Presidents of the United States of America and children's artist Casper Baby Pants, and you are listening to Verbal Shenaniganaganaganaganagans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Everybody, you know this is my favorite part of the show, the intro.
Thought it was talking to me.
No, the intro is always like this awkward part where I'm just like, just do it. Just get up and do it. You know, it's like the,
We should just start a show mid-sentence. And that's why I don't order mayonnaise and so, sandwiches.
And so how'd you get into music again? Like, welcome back to episode 145 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. We are happy to be back. This one felt like pretty quick. I felt like just yesterday we were podcasting.
Yeah.
Where sometimes it feels like... You know, like, feels like, oh, I feel like we haven't been here in a while. Mm. Today, it felt like...
Well, you were on vacation. We had the holiday after that, so time kind of just zoomed by. You didn't have a bunch of different things on your mind, like,
no.
Oh, this aggravates me. It was enjoyment.
Well, and I also think that, like, scheduling guests ahead of time is, like, it's a little bit of a relaxation. Like, wow, it's, like, not just going to be me and Bertlow, God forbid. Like, that's going to be really terrible.
I mean, in all seriousness, it was always that weird moment. It's like, you know, Tuesday's coming up. Do you have anything to talk about?
You got anything?
Do we have a thing?
Yeah, listen. This is why we became a guest-driven show, because...
We looked at each other like, nah. Mm.
We've pretty much told everything about our past at this point. I'm sure there's stuff that will come up eventually, but when I think of, like, funny stories, I'm like, I'm all tapped out.
Yeah.
I'm all tapped out. But, welcome back to the podcast. A lot of fun things going on. The numbers are up. The numbers are up. We got good responses on the last couple episodes.
Yeah, got a lot of for the Victor Wooten one. When I was putting that one up, got a lot of feedback coming back. The people's thoughts on the podcast and Victor himself. So
yeah.
Nice to know people are actually saying yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'll try this out, and then halfway I'll quit. But it's nice to be back. I am back from I got a little reprieve. 3 nights I spent away in Vermont.
Okay.
Beautiful Vermont, and Vermont is we stayed in a little cabin. You know, it wasn't bad. Like a little cabin. It was like a brand new cabin. Like the place's website was like barely up, so it was like kind of a flip of a coin. Like it was like either this is new.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have a good judge of character because I like called the woman. I could hear how passionate, like she followed up like a million times, like, oh, are you bringing the dog up and stuff like that? Because I wanted to go and bring the dog, try something different. So I knew she was like caring, and she's like, I'll leave a dog basket, blah, 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 blah for you. And it was cheap. It was like $120 a night or something like that. Yeah.
Very nice.
And again, the place is like brand new, like, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. She left like a dog basket with all these like towels and blankets and stuff for him. And there's TV there and king size bed and everything real clean. All these nice, I feel like Sebastian Mascot, nice touches. Like, they left like on the table, they had like all these books of like little things to do in Vermont and like a brewery magazine and like a map and hiking trails and, Wi-Fi and like, you know, like all that stuff's normal, but like all these little touches, like we open the refrigerator and there's a little saucer with like cream in it for coffee, like with the with the plastic on top of the on the saucer. So like, you know, it was fresh poured cream, and you know how I'm a big fan of fresh poured cream. Mm-hmm. I can't even say that straightforward, but you know, like
every week you're bringing it up. Scott, we're at Coca-Cola. They don't have the creamer.
Scott, like, yes, we'll get sponsored by a fresh poured cream company. We get it. But the coffee, the little coffee things. It wasn't like little packets of coffee. It was a little jar, like the jars you take the lid off with a scoop in it, like poured freshly to the top. Little mats, plastic mats for like your shoes and like the dog, like when you wipe the dog off to put stuff on. Mm. Little blankets for the futon for the dog to land. Like just really like well
thought
out.
Little cameras in the bathroom so they can keep track of you while you're showering.
Yeah, that's fine. There's nothing, trust me, there's nothing anybody wants to see here. If they want to spy, everyone's worried about the government spying them. Like, go ahead.
Yo, Trump!
That the guy on the other end of that's getting the raw deal, not me.
I thought the FBI would be fun.
I gotta watch this creep like walk around half naked in his soccer shorts from high school. But like little quotes about the woods and stuff like that around, very like comfortable and very accommodating. And for me, like, Vermont is, like, the Napa Valley of, like, beer. Okay. Like, it's, like, every brewery's, like, next level. So we stopped at a whole bunch of them, and I don't want to get into all the detail. But we went to Hill Farmstead, which is arguably, which on a lot of rankings gets, like, number one in the country, like, as far as breweries and stuff. But you literally have to drive, like, through these wood, like, the woods and these dirt roads, and, like, you're only limited. You can only have two drinks there because, like, the roads are so, like, crazy. They don't want people, like, having a million drinks. But the beer, the things people go out and buy. Now, I bought a good amount of beer.
Okay.
Nothing crazy, but, like, a four-pack here, four-pack. People come and load. So we get this one guy. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I'm buying. So, like, maybe there's a couple bottles, and it'd be, like, three per person maximum. He bought every bottle. Now, some of the bottles were $30, like, for a nice bottle of beer, which is fine. So you buy one or whatever. It's expensive, but, you know, you enjoy it with people. He's loading up on everything. He's walking. He had five boxes of beers. And then he puts them in, and we go to the tasting room where we just have, like, a, you know, like an eight-ounce pour.
Yeah.
Of two different things, and he's loading up. He must have had 10 growlers he was filling too, right? And he starts talking. He's like, I don't even know what he was saying. He was like, yeah, I'm out of work right now. I'm in a hotel, and I'm just loading up on some beers. And so tomorrow I'm going to the Alchemist. Come on. But we're like, okay. So the next day we go to the Alchemist, which is like the brewer of Heady Topper, which is like one of like the, it's one of the beers that like started the, like you could only get it in cans in Vermont, and it had this like cult following to it. So sure enough, I'm there. I buy a four pack of each beer, three, four packs.
Mm-hmm.
And
here comes Captain Motel 6.
Here comes exactly.
Hey everybody!
And we see his van. He had a van.
Was it a windowless?
The thing was open. And the beer was piled so high it was hitting the ceiling. And then he had, like, bottles stuck under the seats and stuff. Like you could see the whole car was full of beer. I'm like, he's like, I'm from Virginia. I'm like, you can't be telling me you're going to drink all this, one. Or are you going to be, like, trading it and selling it and stuff? Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, like, it's just too much. It's too much. Grab a four-pack, go home, enjoy the beer, say, hey, we come back again. We get to try it again, you know, like.
Food stamps going to well worth ambitions and
but
life.
It was like I don't know, I'd never seen someone haul that much beer before. And it was kind of gross. It was kind of like relax, dude. Like in the end, yeah, it is some of the most delicious beer in the entire world, if not might be. But how much are you going to take home? Like, do you need that much?
I'm just wondering if, like, is he taking it all the way down to Virginia and reselling it? He's like the guy at the corner in Virginia.
That's what I think. Well, it's
take
funny,
that by right.
Because I think you belong to some of the beer groups now on Facebook, and it's just like, it's just overboard. It's like selling the, who wants to trade? I was in the line for 3.5 hours. Like, dude, listen, as good as this beer is, you can go to the store and probably find something maybe a little, maybe not as good, but pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know, and go in and grab it. Mm. You know? But we did. Other than the breweries, a lot of good food, a lot of driving, like, because the main town was 12 miles away, And then, like, the town after that was another 12. So, like, go to lunch, go to breakfast, you know, 12, 12, yeah. Go back to the cabin, 12, 12. They 25 miles every single time.
It's the kind of place where if you get to where you wanted to go and you realize you didn't bring your wallet, that's 2 hours out of the day.
But we did a lot of cool things. We did the Ben and Jerry's tour. We saw the Ben and Jerry's factory, which is pretty cool. Girlfriend's very into the desserts and whatnot. So
I guess she was like freaking out.
Well, what's funny is
there like an untap for ice cream? Because I'm sure she's going to start that.
Well, actually, I've been wanting to start this for a while.
Okay.
It's called Ice Cream Social.
Mm.
And it's a.
Anybody who's listening, don't steal this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny because I did. Steve Espero has been on here twice. I did a podcast. He has this beer podcast. I sat in with him the other day, and I told him one of my big ideas. I'm like, oh, man, now I'm releasing a couple ideas. So go ahead, people, steal them, or that'll get cut out.
hey, Berlu. And now we're guests.
But we did this hike. We did this hike. It said on the I looked up local hikes in like where we were, and it said moderate, which is pretty moderate. Usually means like, hey, maybe there's some hills and stuff like that.
This is Vermont moderate.
Yeah, Vermoderate.
Copyright pending.
Yeah, so we get there, we take the dog, and from the beginning, it's straight up. It's just like. And it's so muddy from all everything melting, one, and the rain in the last couple weeks. So it's just trudging through slush. And the dog, the whole time, like, I'm worried that he's going to make, no, I'm like, Alex, who's like a runner, is like huffing and puffing. And the dog's like 30 yards ahead of us, like, stopping. Hi, like, come on. Like, hopping up rocks and leaping, like, from rock to rock and killing us. And, like, a bunch of times, like, Alex would be like, I don't know. Like, because it got a little sketchy every once in a while.
Mm.
And I'm like, let's keep going. Because we did see other hikers coming down. But, like, you get to the top of the mountain, and it's still snow up there. So I got shorts on, trudging through the snow. And it's, like a lot of ice and snow. And,
yeah.
But eventually we did get to the top, and Obi's like, he's killing it. Like, just ahead of us. And we get to the top, and we're, you know, we got to take, like, the cutesy fun pictures. The view was amazing, though. Like, 360 degrees of, like, mountains. Like, Adirondack Mountains. You could see it in New York. It was a really cool hike. But it was, like, you know, super. It was pretty technical. And, like, maybe it might have been, like, 2 miles out. But it must have been, like, a mile and a half up. So, like, you weren't even.
It's like doing, like, 40 flights of stairs.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the Grand Canyon was tough. This was, like, kind of the equivalent of that, too. I don't know if it was just adjusting to the elevation or not. But it was hard. And, like, when Alex is struggling, I'm like, okay, I don't feel that bad. Because she runs all the time. So, it's like. But we did that. We did we took the bikes out. A lot of good food. And it was a good time. And I want to take the time to, on the way back, I stopped at the Adirondack Brewery, who is
our proud sponsor,
super supportive of us. They just keep doing amazing things. And they actually left me a gift card for lunch. They left me, because I told them I was going to come up. They left me a gift card for lunch. And we sat and had lunch and tried their amazing shape-shifting IPA. And,
nice.
Just a really nice touch. So the guys at Adirondack Brewery, just a classy touch and just a great trip and a great it turned out perfectly that they were the halfway point, like, from there to home.
Oh.
So it was, like, nice. Like, okay, we'll eat lunch and then in the second half.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So a lot of driving, but well worth the trip. Vermont is a it was an interesting time because you could still go snowboarding and skiing. We were going to do that, but we didn't. But then, like, down Thursday and Friday, it was like 70 degrees out and hot and sunny. So Vermont was very cool. Food is good. The vibe is just so very, like, earthly, environmental, and organic. Yeah. And the only thing that sucked is I got a speeding ticket.
Really?
Yep.
What state?
Vermont.
Vermont themselves. Okay. What were you doing?
Now, those of you who know me, which probably a lot of you don't, but I am not a fast driver. I drive very much 10 miles over the speed limit, something like that. I got a...
I don't know, it's Buffalo, Illinois trying to call me. Not Buffalo, New York, Buffalo, Illinois.
Oh, that's the home of the corn bills.
That was great. We should keep that joke in here.
But
continue.
What was I talking? So I'm not a fast driver. I'm not. I really not. I'm 5'10" over the speed limit all the time. And in the truck, I don't like flying around in trucks. Cars are a little different, but I don't trucks. And I'm driving, and sure enough, I see a cop turn around. I'm like, we're getting pulled over, and of course, he flips the lights on, and Copy McCop comes out with his big
Copy McCop,
his hat, like, you know, the big full brim hat, but he had the rain covering on top of it.
Oh, he doesn't want his uniform.
Yeah, he had a special hat condom on top of his hat. So I'm like, I said to Alex, I said, this guy's no way I'm getting off on this.
No,
he's like, you were going through a municipal area. I'm like, really? A municipal area in Vermont is like a shack with a sign that says local government building. And I'm like, okay. He's like, how fast do you think you were going? I'm like, honestly, sir, I would say probably like 50. He's like, well, I clocked you at 60. I'm like, maybe I was coming down a hill or something. I'm like, but maybe. And he's like, well, do you want to come back and see? I'm like, no.
Wow.
Well, this is how bad situations. No, I'm not even black, but this is how bad. Like, you go back and, like, you know, you could do anything with that. I'm like, whatever. And this is the first time I can ever remember giving a cop a little bit of attitude, like, because, you know, like, I had the little PBA thing, blah blah blah. I gave it to him, and I'm like, can this help us out? He's like, well, you know, you could have got 3 points on your license, and I knocked it down to 2. Unless you want to come up one day and show us your driving record. I'm like, come up one day? We're 5 hours away. I'm like, you know what? I said, I get it. I'm out of town, and you pulled me over. And I said, and this is the problem. I said, so would this help? And I had the little gold card. My buddy's a cop. Okay, it says family member thing. And he's like, oh, if you were an active duty cop, yeah, maybe. I'm like, it just shows that it's just a crock of crap. And this guy just wanted to get his quota in. And, you know, I'm not going to let it bother me, but now I get 2 points. You know, now I'll take.
So some states, they don't bring it up. So Vermont brings it over to Jersey.
I guess so. I don't know. I'm going to pay it. And I think I'll take that one of, like, those defensive driving courses and get the 2 points knocked off. But I think 2 points comes off every year. Like, I think it's a year.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was hard because that was going up, so it was, like, hard not to sour the trip. You know?
I wonder if anybody took him up on that. You want to see? Yeah, okay, let's go. Yeah.
Can we go for a ride? Yeah. Can I put the lights on?
Hey, it says 50. Damn it. Nobody ever asks.
Can I put the lights and siren on?
Whee!
But overall, Vermont was an amazing time. And all right, Mike Berlow, I think it's guest time. We've talked enough here.
I think it is mainly because he told us he's ready.
Yeah, we got a packed show tonight. Mm-hmm. We got a packed show, but we got a pretty big guest on tonight. Someone that was definitely involved in my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure yours, maybe not childhood, like, but I'd say
growing
like
up,
middle
teenage,
school, high school, yeah. Like they were around. But Chris Ballew. Mm-hmm. Is that how I said Ballew?
Ballew.
Yep. So we got Berlew and Ballew on the pod. Maybe you guys are like secretly related, and over time they just changed.
Wait a minute. Do you know Bob?
Did your dad eat the first nectarine too? That's going way back into an old episode. But you may know him from the Presidents of the United States of America. Peaches, Lump,
Kitty.
Yeah, so some big songs, and now I guess he does a lot of children's music under the name Casper Baby Pants.
Yep.
So without further ado, let's give Chris Ballew a call. What do you say?
I do. See what I did there? It rhymed.
Yeah. I was setting you, I was throwing you like a softball.
Oh.
All right, here we go.
Oh, I hit it.
You did hit it, son.
Well, that was a quick interview.
There he was, Chris Ballew, everybody.
Only the best hang up on verbal shenanigans.
Hello.
Hey, is this Chris?
Yes, it is.
Chris, it's Scott Brennan, and this is Mike Berlow here. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here.
Yeah, my pleasure. I appreciate your interest. And yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. Like today on the show, we have you and a guy in charge of the Green Bank Radio Observatory. What would you even call it? Telescope?
Radio astronomy.
Yeah, observatory. So we got a very nice variety of guests tonight. So thanks for
awesome. That's right up my alley. I love that. I love that stuff.
Well, that's awesome. So the episode will have both of you guys on it. But
yeah.
Chris, I mean, I just said to Berlew, not you, but Lou, you guys might be like long lost brothers or something. You know, I think of like when, you know, like people were coming through like, New York back in the day and they changed everyone's last name. Maybe there's a chance that you guys are related. Like, they butchered everyone's last
name. Like his great great grandfather was in line and he said Berlew, and then my great great grandfather was like, damn it, I was going to use that. yeah. Let me change a couple
letters. And like your real last name's like Beluskovich.
Yeah. It could be. I mean, actually, it's funny. We had Easter yesterday and
we did too.
My family was talking. Yeah, it's weird. We tend to do it on the same day as everyone else.
Yeah.
We're kind of followers in that sense. Yeah. My family was talking about doing a genealogy thing, and they had done it with a couple members of the family, and we'd always gone around with the assumption that we had French in us, because Balou is a French name, but actually my mother's mother grew up on the island of Jersey, which is technically English, and it looks at France, but it's between England and France. And so we're actually like very, very, very little French. So we all kind of had to reorganize our concepts of ourselves yesterday at Easter brunch.
that's like a comic I know, KP Burke. He's a local comic here in Jersey, but he's adopted and he does this whole bit about he's got like an Irish flag tattoo and a shamrock, and he took one of those Ancestry.com spit swamp things. He's like, oh my god, if this doesn't come out Irish, like I'm in trouble.
One question: how's the sound of my voice? I'm trying this new microphone. Is it all right?
You sound pretty good. You sound a little bit echoey, but you sound nice and loud.
Mm-hmm. Let me see. It might be because I'm in a big room.
Right. It doesn't sound like you're. It almost sounds like you're using like a room mic, like a computer or whatnot, and not directly.
Let me unplug it and see if it changes. Hold on.
No problem.
Okay, this is option B. Is this better?
It sounds exactly the same.
Exactly. Oh, so this mic must not be doing its thing. I don't know.
Well, are you in Skype?
I'm in Skype. Yeah.
Sometimes you got to change the Skype settings, the audio settings.
Oh,
because sometimes, like I used to, like I'm Skyping you through my cell phone right now, so I don't really have to change anything anymore because you're going through a soundboard. But you used to have to do like here. Actually, I have Skype here.
IT support.
Yeah,
with Chris Ballou.
Yeah.
Now look at this. This is fascinating stuff.
If you go to options and you go to audio settings,
audios in Skype.
Yes.
Audio settings. Let's see, but about like a preferences kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay, preferences, privacy, calls, messaging, blah, 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 audio, video.
Try, what's audio?
There we go. Microphone, built-in microphone. Yes. Oh, I see.
So you're using the built-in probably right now.
Let me plug in my fancy microphone here. Mm-hmm. And then there it is, Blue Snowball.
Yep. Oh, the Snowball is a good one too.
There we go.
Now I'm using Blue Snowball.
Oh, you sound like 10,000 times better.
Oh, goody. Okay, good. I got this thing to I set up a little demo studio. I'm at this little house I have on Vashon Island, and I have a little demo studio here, and I bought this mic for that, so I thought I'd try it for this.
That's a great little microphone. The Snowball. And it's cool looking, so that also adds to it.
Yeah, it kind of looks like some sort of parasite that might live in Darth Vader's cape.
So
let's keep on supporting. Open up your task manager. Let's see what kind of services are running.
Yeah. this is a tech podcast, right?
Yes, it is. It's actually called tech support. We hang up on the guy right before he solves the problem.
Yeah.
So about my music career, click.
Yes. So I'm starting this new project. Boop. But, Chris, I was just saying... Your music, very recognizable. I guess I was probably – you were actually – the President of the United States were my – that was my first CD. You and Dookie were my two first CDs, right, when I guess the advent of CDs were coming around and Columbia House, the 10 CDs for a penny and all that kind of stuff. And you were the first one with Lump and whatnot. But you came out now – how long ago, like how old were you when the President of the United States started? Was it way before your first record, or was, like, how did that happen?
That happened, let's see, that started really in earnest as the President's in December of 93, I think, was our very first gig with Jason at the drums. So what was I then? I was 28 years old.
All right.
Yeah. So I was not a spring chicken. I'd been kind of
easy there.
I've been kind of hacking away on my own in weird little bands in Boston and Seattle back and forth for a long, you know, like 8 years. So
Boston and Seattle.
Well, Boston and Seattle. I was kind of like hopping between those three and starting and stopping bands like crazy. So there was a lot of failed attempts at writing good songs before the President's kind of came along. So, yeah, and really we formed in 93, you know, there December, end of 93, so really 94. And then we were signed by the end of the summer, I think, in 94. 94 was a big year. The President started, and then I got
the OJ trial,
baseball strike.
Oh yeah, I remember. I was on the tour bus with Beck when we watched OJ hunted down, because I got a job playing with Beck, and then President's got signed, and everything changed in 94. That was a big year. I was 28, 29. Huh. The year everything went nuts.
No, what were you doing?
I missed that in the OJ miniseries.
Yeah, that's on the DVD, the extended cut.
Yeah, if you really squint, you can see me in the tour bus watching the chase with Beck in the background.
OJ speeds right past him in one scene.
Yeah.
But what were you doing? You guys were you like so you were you just gigging small bar gigs, club gigs, stuff like that? And when you got noticed, or how did that happen? Chris,
hello.
We lost you, Chris.
I guess he has to go back into settings.
Settings. Ignore podcast. All right, let's try.
That's a popular setting.
I'll just call him back.
Yep.
I want the sweet Skype song.
That's like Mario throwing the fireball.
Your brother's a real dick.
It's a family thing. Probably Uncle Tommy's over there. He spilled over something, hit his computer.
He said, oops, something went wrong.
There he is.
Oh, that's funny. It's coming through my phone and my computer. Hey, Chris.
Hi.
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 All right, going to the logs.
Yeah, no, I just got bored.
He's like, this would be really cool if we just hung up on them.
Yeah. No, I'm at this house, and the internet on this island is notoriously funky. So,
Oh, nice. That's the theme of the podcast. The radio observatory is not allowed to have any internet or Wi-Fi. So we'll see how that goes later.
Yeah, you don't think of giant parabolic telescopes as being notoriously funky. So that's those don't really go together.
Well, they're made in the '60s, so that's why it had a little funky.
So maybe they are notoriously funky. I think actually I might make that my.
Notoriously Funky's got a good ring to your next project.
Yeah,
I think that might be it.
I play bass. So anyway. Just to let you know.
Copyright.
But last thing we're talking about was before you guys got seen. Were you gigging? Were you?
We were small clubs and whatnot. Yeah, small clubs and bars and stuff like that, and house parties, and we were just, you know, we made an experiment. We started to play, and people started to come, and the crowds got a little bigger and a little bigger, and we decided to run an experiment, and we decided to just play as much as we possibly can and see if people would stop coming. So we did. We played like, I don't know, 3 times a week for a month, you know, and the crowds just continued to grow and grow. And then late that summer,
We played a show just like we, you know, typically would. And it turned out there were 7 major labels in attendance, and I didn't know it. I don't know if my bandmates knew it. I can't remember, but they didn't tell me, luckily, because I didn't freak out. I freaked out in the good way, you know, the funny, weird way, that people loved. And so the next day we had 7 major label offers.
Wow.
So that was like, we went from like, you know, just playing our scene in Seattle, and then one day, like, okay, if you guys want it, you can get on this crazy pony and ride it.
Now, so, were you playing songs that would become that first record at that time?
Oh, yeah. All of those songs.
All of them, yeah.
Going in to record that first record was kind of more like taking a snapshot of who we were as a band, less like, let's craft a record, you know. We were just trying to capture the loose kind of fun time that we were having playing shows.
So. See, it's funny. I was just talking. My brother works in the music industry in New York. He's doing them like we were just talking yesterday about like that first record's always so hard to produce because a lot of these bands, it's like, you know, I mean, to reproduce, because a lot of these bands, it's a couple years worth of work, 8 years, 9 years worth of work, where same thing with, like, comics. Their first special is always, like, this amazing thing, and you realize they're crafting these jokes for their whole beginning of their career before they got noticed. So I feel like that second album, that's always why it's so hard to even get that feeling, because the first album is very representative of who you were for years, usually.
Yeah, there is like a subtle, like the energy of your life kind of seeps into what you're making. And when the energy of your life is really good, like it was when we made the first record, I mean, life was good, man. It was simple, hanging out with my friends, you know, smoking weed, drinking beers, having a barbecue if we wanted to, playing frisbee in the park. And then, oh, look, it's 7 o'clock. It's time to go to the rock show and play. It was just an extension of a good day, you know. Mm. And then I don't want to be like a complaining rock star or whatever, but when you get signed, your day is very different than the laid back, you know, hanging out with the friends, barbecue. Oh, look, it's time to go to the rock show thing. It's more, your time is not your own. You're constantly being kind of poked and prodded and asked questions and moved around, and you're in backstages with like really warm ham, and it's just, you know, warm. You know, room temperature ham and barbecued burgers are totally different animals. Mm. Well, literally. So it's just, so then we go to make the second record, and your energy's, you know, kind of drained and kind of different. And I always like to say our second record is a really good EP, even though it's trying to be an LP. So
right.
It's like there's probably a really good EP's worth of ideas in there that we stretched. So, you know, that's why it's a cliche, because I think everybody kind of gets all wrung out by the experience. And we should have taken like a year or two to kind of chill and make a second record on our own time. But we got all excited, and, you know, the major label was saying, you guys got to jump back on the horse and ride, because now's the time. And of course, they just wanted to bleed us dry. You know,
always do.
So,
of course.
But we survived.
We're experiencing the same thing right now. All these podcast networks are like, wow, you know, we'll pay you guys millions. But nah, man.
I thought this was the episode where they were actually going to call us. You know, after hearing Chris's story, I'm like, oh, okay. We're going to hang up. And it's like, Scott, look who's on the phone.
We just got to keep our integrity. We're like, nah, man, we're not selling out to the man. And then
Scott really likes his barbecues. That's the biggest thing why he won't sign.
Well, you know, hey, man, it's a different world now. I mean, you know, I'm doing music for families now, and I'm running my own label and doing it all myself.
That's
and
awesome.
With this internet thing, it's incredible. I mean, I can basically run an international label with a laptop and
100%.
And some time. So it's a whole different world, man. You don't have to wait around for permission from anybody to be successful these days. So I love that.
I agree. This whole show, this little stupid show we do weekly, is all attributed to the internet. Like, we just reach out to people more and more and more. And that's actually what helped us find the identity of this show. Mike was just talking to me before, like, yeah, we were going to interview this guy years ago, but we didn't really know what we were. And, like, we started this show. We were just, like, two idiots talking, trying to be funny. Now it's like, why are we trying to be – like, let's just go talk to interesting people. And, like, you know, the funny conversations will come out. Or it's not even funny. It's just more about, like, finding people who have a story. So we – Exactly. We the internet's like we just run our own thing, and we never say no to anyone. We're like, we'll send emails and see who says yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, not to sound like an old man, but it was different back in my day. No, wait, I did sound like an old man. Wow. Wait, not to sound like a clown, but it was different back in my day. Wait a minute, not to sound like a duck, but... Okay, I got to stop. So, yeah, it was really different, though. I mean, I feel like we were kind of one of the last band. You know, we were on the tail end of that period where you did it the old-fashioned way. You know, you, like, got offers, and you sifted through them, and... got a lawyer and a manager and signed with a major label and went on tour and blah, blah, blah. So I'm kind of happy that I got the traditional way because I grew up with that, you know, like
right. The
whole time I was growing up, like, okay, I think I know how it's going to happen. And if it happened after the shift, that would have been extremely disorienting. So it was cool. You know, it was a good experience. I'll chalk it up.
Now, the one thing I really remember, along with the songs, I just remember how fun your music videos were with Lump and Peaches and Video Killed the Radio Star. It just seems like you guys literally went in there, embraced it, and had fun. And it's like one of the last kind of like real groups I remember who really looked to the video music, if you will. I mean, the only other one I can think of after you guys is Foo Fighters right about now.
Oh, yeah, where the video is funny and entertaining and engaging and
possibly
has nothing to do with the song. Like, we got attacked by ninjas in a song about peaches. What the heck is that all about? That, yeah, I know what you mean. That was fun. That was challenging, though. In the immortal words of the great Mitch Hedberg, he talked about how he was a stand-up comedian and he got approached by somebody who, you know, like a network that wanted him to write a sitcom. And he's like, that doesn't make any sense, man. What does that mean? Like, oh, so you're a cook? Can you farm? And the musician side of that is, oh, so you can write songs? Can you make little movies?
Right.
You know, like, it was so weird that had to suddenly become part of our skill set in order to be successful. That's why we hired Roman Coppola, son of Francis Ford, to do all of our videos, because he was inspired and had a lot of energy. And so he came up with the ninja thing. You know, he came up with a lot of the stuff that kept us, you know, looking fresh.
Now, let me ask you, when did the presidents officially stop, or do you guys still, like, get together? Because, no, let's face it, no band's really ever done. They could always come back and, you know, do a couple tours.
Yeah, we did that already, though. We did the, you know, we broke up in, we did our quote unquote last show in January of 98.
Come on, the Stones have been doing their last show for 30 years.
Well, no, I know, but then during the, we broke up for 5 years.
Okay.
But during that 5 years, we formed a band with Sir Mix-a-Lot.
I wanted to bring that up, too.
Mm-hmm. We made a record for a music company called Music Blitz, just a recorded record. No, we made that record, and then we didn't tour, but we did record an entire show with Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses as our bass player.
It's awesome.
And so, you know, we were busy. And then we got back together officially in the beginning of 2003 and did it for another like 12 or 13 years with a new guitar player. So we've already had like two acts, you know.
Right.
We've kind of run through all the cliches now. And then the last time we stopped in July of 2015 and just decided not to make any big deal out of it. We already kind of did, like I said, the big last show at the Paramount Theater. Mm. So we just decided, you know what, let's just quietly flip the light switch off and walk out of the room and keep it on the down low. So that's what we did. Yeah. But this time is different. This time is very, you know, last time I quit the band in 97 in a real huff, like mad, overworked, overtired, emotionally distressed, kind of like went to a band meeting and said, I have first order of business, I quit, blah, you know, just like barfed it out on those guys. The second time I quit, very different, very like neutral, like, okay, this really has run its course. This set of clothing that I've been wearing, you know, metaphorical set of clothes I've been wearing as guy from the presidents doesn't fit anymore, and it hasn't fit for a long time, and I'm ready to not put it on anymore. And I've got this Casper baby pants thing, and it is like full-time job, and I'm, you know, super into it and running my own show and loving it, and it's successful. And I just want to like hang out at home and get back to that barbecue with my friends.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So it's a very different vibe this time. It's a much more kind of, okay, it's, you know, it's appropriate time to kind of like say, okay, 23 years, check. That's good. Rock yeah,
that's
band,
a good run. That's a good run.
Not bad.
Yeah. And that's, sure. That's like I told the guys when I was telling them I wanted to stop for real, I was like, hey guys, I don't know if you noticed, but we won.
It's true. What else lasts 23 years? Like,
why do we have to keep, why do we have to keep hammering away at this thing? We actually won the game, so let's just kind of walk away from the field.
They got the Weird Al parody song in, so they were set. It's gone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, more can you...
True.
Weird Al played me in a video. What more can I possibly squeeze out of this experience? Well, what I did squeeze out of that experience is a nice friendship with Weird Al. So
that's awesome. Can you get him on our podcast?
Yeah,
sure you could, actually. Yeah, he's agreeable fellow.
That would be amazing.
He's a good man. He's a good man. Greatest, best listener I've ever had a conversation with face to face, really. I noticed that for years hanging out with him. He's just really like paying attention and listening. And then one time I complimented him on that. I was like, Al, you know, you are one of the greatest listeners. You're just right there in the conversation. He's like, actually, my hearing damage is pretty bad and I need to focus or I won't know what you're saying.
Just out of curiosity, how does that work out? Does he contact you or does he contact your producers? How does that work to allow him to do a parody song?
I think he probably, back in those days, he probably reached out to the label because it wasn't like you could call me at home or, of course, email me because there was no such thing. So, yeah, I think it was more like reaching out to the label, and then the label would check with our manager and our manager would check with us and we would check with our lawyer and blah, 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 blah. So, of course, with us, it was totally great, totally fine. Big honor, amazing. You know?
Absolutely. Loved I grew it. Up on that guy.
Oh, I know, man. I mean, yeah, watching MTV back in the day when I was a kid, just like dreaming of, you know, having anything to do with that world. And then to eventually end up having him be me in a video is just, it's super funny and lovely at the same time.
So let's talk about the new music that you do, Casper Baby Pants. Kind of yeah. Give us a timeline.
Mostly I did that so I would make people say those words.
I mean, let's talk about the timeline with that. As I was reading up about how you kind of did like a children's music album, donated it to charity, and thought nothing of it. And then it was basically your wife kind of got involved and told you, this may be something to consider. Can you tell us about like the whole story with that?
Yeah. So I did make a record and kind of traditional kids songs in 2000, I think, or 2001. And I donated it to a local organization that does parent education classes and stuff.
That's great.
And I do remember when I made that record, I remember feeling like, wow, this is really relaxing and really like easy and fun and low pressure and just feeling this huge weight lift off me.
Now, what traditional songs are you doing? Like, what are you doing at this time?
Oh, on that record?
Yes.
They had a list. They kind of told me what they wanted because the idea was to make a record that would kind of connect with the... So this organization would get new parents together in a group in like a neighborhood, like say this one part of town. All these people have just had babies. So let's get them together and we'll kind of like... You know, the parents can talk about what they're nervous about or afraid of or, you know, is this normal, blah, blah, blah. And then they would do little activities with the babies in the group. And I was going to make a record that would accompany the group setting, you know. And
sidebar music video with ninjas attacking the women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
who
yeah.
Are nervous about the baby. Great video. Mm-hmm. Great video ahead.
Instead of three ninjas attacking the presidents, it was like 200 little baby ninjas attacking.
Yeah, one 23-year sequel to the Peaches video.
Yeah.
Wrap actually, your whole career up.
No, my enemies had children. No!
That's not a bad idea. I should do a Casper video where I get attacked by a ninja just as a nod.
I think it's great. Mm. Just let me be in the background. Can I be the ninja?
Yeah. Yeah, made that record and then just kind of turned back toward, you know, doing the presidents got back together a couple years later. And right. we made 1, 2, 3 more records during the next decade or four. I can't remember. So anyway, at some point during that time on this, you know, the whole time, basically the presidents were doing their thing. I had this little voice in the back of my head saying, you know, congratulations, you've hit the big time, but this is not what you're supposed to be doing. Ultimately, you got to keep searching. And it was this like impulse to keep on scrapping away and finding something else. And so I kept doing that and I kept working on the side, even forming bands on the side and trying different things, and nothing worked. And then as I kept experimenting with that, it got simpler and simpler and quieter and more acoustic, kind of more like that record I made in 2000 as time went by. And then in about 2008, after I had started dating my second wife for a couple years, I looked at her artwork one day. She makes this fantastic art collage stuff. And I was like, wow, I want to make music that sounds like it's in the same world as that artwork. The artwork has like animals in it, and it's bright and it's well made and it's folksy and simple. And I was like, that's all the adjectives I want to use to describe this mysterious music that I can't put my finger on. So I made music directly related to her art, like, you know, a song that went with one of her pictures. And when I listened back to it, when it was finished, a huge cartoon light bulb went off over my head. And I realized I'm supposed to be making music for families and little kids. And it was like this giant relief, like, oh, my God, there's my path. So as a result, you know, and that was in 2008. And I put out the first record in 2009. And here we are in 2017. And I've got 12 records out and the 13th coming out in August. Well, yeah, and no end in sight. I mean, I've got songs backed up, recorded, and even and demoed and written for years to come. So
really,
yeah, I really found my thing. This is what I was supposed to be doing the whole entire time.
Well, let's face it, like Peaches kind of could have been a kid's song, right?
Well, yeah, exactly.
If you take out the harder, like even the drums and stuff. I mean, millions of peaches for me. I could sing that with my niece today.
Yeah, sure. That's the whole thing, is like the presidents, the thing that made that band work was you had this innocent song that also had innuendo. You know, it was like where the innocence and the innuendo kind of rub up against each other, and that's what made us kind of weirdly like evocative and fun. Silly. So I just decided I'm going to take out the innuendo part and I'm going to remove the drums and the loud guitars and get at the core, and that's it. So really, I was Casper Baby Pants the entire time. I just got sidetracked in a very successful rock band.
Now the name, where did that come from?
That came from, so back in the 90s, and in fact, well, I'll say after what, but back in the 90s, my brain's all like going a million directions at once. Okay, here we go. We're time traveling here. This is crazy. I just put up on my other, I have a website for my art and other music that's not Casper called chrisbaloo.org, and I just put up all the old cassettes that I used to make as Casper.
That's cool.
So I had this other persona in the early 90s as Casper, but it was kind of like, you know, kind of funky, weird, messy four-track recordings of songs, in some cases, which would become President songs later, and some would become Casper songs later, Casper Baby Pants. But so that was a name I used to make these weird cassettes, Casper. And then one winter, I didn't have a hat to wear, and I was poor, and I was living in Boston, and it was cold, and I went to this hippie co-op grocery store, and they had a bin of donated clothing for people who, like me, who couldn't afford a hat. So I went in there and I reached my hand in this vat of hippie clothing and I pulled out this hand knitted pair of baby's pants, and they were wool and they were beautiful and they were like one of a kind, and I put them on my head and they fit me perfectly and they were warm and cozy, and I went around the whole winter with those pants on my head.
Lovely.
And the kids in my neighborhood started calling me Baby Pants, like, yo, Baby Pants, where you going, man? And so I took Casper and Baby Pants and put them together. And back in the early 90s, when I was in a jam band with Mark Sandman from Morphine from Boston, who was kind of like the guy that taught me how to play a two-string guitar.
Right.
That was my stage name, was Casper Baby Pants. So when I went to make kids' music, I was scratching my head thinking, well, what am I going to call it? My name, or make something up? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm already Casper Baby Pants. I'll just use that. So It was another like breadcrumb of inevitability that I had laid along the path of my life leading towards Casper Baby Pants.
Now, let me ask you something. Like,
Wait a minute. Breadcrumb of Inevitability. That might be the name of my next album.
Ooh. Yeah. With, what was the funk name we had before? We're going to have to listen back. I've heard the name of the...
I'm just...
Notoriously Funky. Notoriously Funky's debut album is The Breadcrumb of Inevitability.
Oh, my God. I want to do acid right now just hearing the name of it.
Right now.
Well, so all I got to say is the way he said, yo, baby pants. No, I thought that was a Sir Mix-a-Lot video.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, baby pants, get over here.
Pants, and I cannot lie.
I guess before anything, we should ask that whole Sir Mix-a-Lot thing. How did that even come about?
Oh my gosh, another just bizarre turn of events. So somebody wanted to do a cover album, an album of covers of Jimi Hendrix songs, and they wanted to kind of pair up Seattle artists to do these covers. And so Mix got a contacted by those people, and his thought was, well, let me pair up with the Presidents to do this Jimi Hendrix cover. So he invited us all out to dinner one night. You know, you just get a call one day. It's like, hey, it's Sir Mix-a-Lot. Meet me here for dinner. And I'm like, okay.
Happens all the time to me.
I know. I hate that. Junk calls.
Those phone calls.
Chili's,
you know,
again,
phone calls.
Sir Mix-a-Lot? Come on.
Yeah. So we met him for dinner, and we talked about the idea. But quickly, we actually decided to not even do that Jimi Hendrix cover. We got along so well and had such similar ideas about music. And, the Presidents weren't a band at that point. We were just three guys. So we were like, well, let's make a new band. And so we started getting together, and Presidents would record instrumentals, and Mix would take them away and write lyrics and songs and parts for them. And then I'd write kind of my parts. And the first few tracks we did together were just like magical. They just totally gelled and came together and felt great. So we're like, okay, let's make a band. And so we did. And then as we went on, like, the reason I called it Subset was I was picturing, like, well, finding the common ground between Sir Mix-a-Lot and Dave Dieterer and Jason Finn and me is like finding the common ground where we all listen to the mix and go, yeah, that's great, it's done. That was a very small subset of aesthetics. Right? Like, that's why I call it Subset. But that very small piece of land that we shared, as we hung out more and as Mix kind of wanted to like push the sound away from just the three-piece guitar, bass, drums thing, that land shrank to the point where it was kind of non-existent. It was kind of me and Mix working together doing weirder stuff, and Jason and Dave kind of wanting it to be more three-piece rock band with
rap. Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Mm. Which is fine. You know, that's how we started, and that's what they were into. But as a result, which was really great for me, I learned how to record on a computer. I was working on a 4-track cassette deck until then, an 8-track cassette. Mm. And Mix is the one who kind of went, no, Chris, you got to get rid of those cassettes and you got to buy a computer. And I was like, I don't know, Mix, it's too complicated and visual and weird. And he's like, no, trust me, you got to do it. And he pushed me into it and gave me a shopping list and everything. And so finally I did, and I have him to thank for my prolific abilities now to record. So in the end, you know, we did a West Coast tour. We recorded pretty much an entire album, but the whole thing kind of got crushed under the weight of its own expectations and just kind of naturally disintegrated. 'Cause like I said, that little common ground got microscopic eventually. So
now let me ask you something. We had the pleasure of talking to Victor Wooten 2 weeks ago, who just is, you know, mind-blowingly like an instrumental in my life, but also just like a really chill dude, an amazing bass player, obviously. But we got to talk to him a little bit about, he's an example, which I think I can relate to you. He's a very niche market, the bass playing thing, or Bay of Fleck and the Fleck tones and all that stuff, where now you have something where, one, you're doing Casper Baby Pants, kids music for mothers and children, and then even the Presidents at some point were kind of a niche market. With the internet, where I can go on right now, go to Spotify and bring up Casper Baby Pants, which is great that I could, you know, people hearing this right now could be like, who's that? You know, oh, that's great. But we were talking about the importance of like touring and how like you know, there hasn't been like a catch up or what, like a, you know, where streaming is paying you the same as where you would have sold records. And you also touched on, like, yeah, it's great you're your own boss and stuff like that, but there's got to be a fine in between, because that's got to be your living. So where do you find, like, where do you stand on that? Like, as far as streaming, making money, yeah, live music? I know that's a lot in one question, but.
No, it actually boils down to something pretty simple for me. It's kind of like one of the things I was missing clarity on before, when I was in the president's and that little voice was saying, keep looking for your actual thing. One of the elements that I wasn't getting was a real clear sense of being in service to a particular kind of person, you know, like not having the music not just be clever and fun to listen to, but also have it serve a purpose and work out in the world in a really clear way. And so the music I make as Casper Baby Pants does that, because what I'm trying to do is make a tool for parents to use to reduce stress on long car rides or a boring Sunday afternoon when it's raining outside and everyone's pent up and restless. You can have a dance party. I'm trying to give them, or when your child needs to go to sleep, I made a lullaby record. You should be able to put that on and it should knock your child out, you know. So I'm trying to make stuff that exists beyond, look at me, I'm a clever songwriter, but it's really like a tool that parents can use. So to that end, I really don't worry about any of the stuff you talked about, because it all follows the prow of the ship, which is purpose and usefulness. You know, like parents come up to me at the merch table and they're literally in tears, like, you've saved our experience of raising our child from being a nervous, tense experience to being a super fun, you know, relaxed, happy experience. And so that really, like, gets me, and that gives me, like, energy to pour more you know, focus into making better songs and better albums. But yeah, it's just, you know, I feel like if I could find that sense of purpose, then all that stuff about money will just not matter, because people will need it.
So then you find the internet and streaming and stuff like that a good thing?
Yeah, I'm fine with it, really. I definitely feel like, you know, when people buy a CD at a show that I sign for them and they're like, it's for a gift, I'm like, well, make sure to, you know, burn it into your iTunes before you give it away as a gift, so you both get it. I just want it in more hands doing, you know, helping families feel better. That's my goal. And so I don't stress about that other stuff. I mean, you know, the sales are good. Families, parents, I don't think a lot of them don't have the bandwidth to even sign up for Spotify. They just, like, you know, go to the record store, or I sell a lot of CDs at record stores, and I sell a lot through iTunes and other like paid for kind of places, you know, where you pay for music. So the families, something about tired parents makes them too lazy to be clever.
It's funny, isn't it? My brother used to work at the label that put out those Kids Bop CDs. And they had all these, like, unique artists on the label, and they were, you know, they were good. They did it, but the Kids Bop CDs that you could pick up at the, you know, the local store at the counter,
the Kmart,
murdered. Like, the sales were through the roof, like 90s, 2000 sales. So it was, you know, pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's, and I have the advantage of, you know, I play for 0 to 5 year olds specifically. Like, I don't sing songs about anything quote unquote cool, like rocket ships and robots and, that's, you know, cool. What do you want to be when you grow up and all that? I keep my subject matter really abstract and surreal and weird and nature based and animal based and, you know, just like the president's. So I'm not competing with anything cool. So I'm kind of off in my own spot in that sense too. And I think that helps, because people are like, oh, look, here's a whole vocabulary of songs that are different and unique. So, you know, I kind of stand out by just doing my thing, I guess. I don't know, but it's working out. People are buying it. And every 5 years that a whole audience grows out of me. So then I have a whole new crop come in. So.
That's true.
So, you know, it's like a perennial product, too, I'm hoping, that'll just kind of, like, trickle out for years and years.
Now, I'm reading up here, when you played with the president, you played a bassitar, which is six-stringer with guitar and bass strings on that. Are you still playing that as Casper Baby Pants? And Was it something where you were a bass player and you also wanted to do guitar or vice versa, or how'd that go about? Well,
yeah, Mark Sandman from Morphine, from this band from Boston, he showed me the two-string thing. He played a two-string slide bass, and we became friends, and I was over at his house one time, and he had this version of his two-string that was set up to be a guitar, so you could actually finger the fretboard instead of just using a slide, because he used to raise the strings way up. And I picked it up, and it just was like, oh, man, that's it. That's what I've been looking for, this like kind of groovy, stringy, simple, you know, chunky sound, and just clicked. So I played two string in the Presidents, and Dave Dieterer, the guitar player, and then eventually Andrew McCaig, the second guitar player, played what we called a git bass, which is three strings on a guitar. So I played two strings on a guitar through a bass amp, and the git bass was three strings on a guitar through a guitar amp. And the idea was that it would sound like one big instrument. And we took all those high strings off because they get in the way of vocals, you know, get in the way of like that frequency. And then we took all the cymbals away from Jason Finn and on the drum kit, except for a tiny, tiny splash and a tiny, tiny hi-hat. And again, to make room for the vocals. So that was kind of like a aesthetic decision, and also a like it felt good, and it was an aesthetic decision, and it was something else for people to write about, you know, like, and this band only has five strings between them, you know, like another reason to kind of like
tune in,
you know, yeah, tune in and be like, this band is weird. But so now with Casper, my main instrument is the git bass. I play a three string to write most. Yeah. But there's two string bass on all the albums. So I'm still playing three and two, and lots of piano and, you know, little shakers and various weird instruments, but mostly two string and three string still. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, Chris, I don't want to take up all your time, but thank you so much.
Well, I hope we don't talk until I die.
Well, no, you got music to make. You got a new crop coming up.
Wait, we can really sell this podcast if we do that.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. The podcast where Chris died.
I don't think you can use up all of my time.
Dang it.
But, Chris, I want to thank you so much for giving us some time, and more than enough time. But we wish you luck with whether you're doing Casper Baby Pants or a different sign project. If people want to go check you out or say hi or say, hey, I heard this interview on this amazing podcast, where can they go?
Yeah, the main place, there's two websites. One for Casper Baby Pants, you go to babypantsmusic.com. And then for all things Chris Ballew, including the re-release of a huge number of old cassette tapes and albums and ambient music that I make for meditation and art that I do, drawings, you can go to chrisballew.org. That's chrisballew.org. Thank you very much. This is my radio announcer voice.
That's pretty good.
Hey, Chris, I want to thank you again. I was the one to contact you, and you got right back to me. And this has been such a fun, interesting interview. I guess my one last question for you is, since you hit big stuff in music and still going there, how'd you stay so laid back and relaxed and all? Because this is like me just chatting with somebody at a, you know,
because he's your brother. He's your long lost brother.
I'm your misspelled brother.
Hardly have an uncle with that story, but
yeah.
It's well, you know what? Chris is the other one.
Here's the real reason. Like I said, before we got signed, life was simple and easy and fun and relaxed. And then we got signed, and it was thrilling. You know, it's like I spent my whole life kind of wondering what that might be like, while also cultivating joy of being wherever I was. You know, like I determined that recording a song on my 4-track, putting it on a cassette, playing a show at the local, you know, open mic, and selling a tape out of my bag was success. Like I felt like truly successful at that point. So having the opportunity to be traditionally successful was like, okay, I'll try it out. But I'm a little leery of it. And sure enough, the sensation was basically this: you get signed, you become successful and famous, and it's like being let into a secret room where everything's better and everything's happening and everybody cool is in that room, right? So you get let in the room, and what you immediately notice is that inside that room is another room. And you have to work equally hard to get into that room where everything's going to be great. And then you get into that room, and there's another room. And I saw this, like, you know, like M.C. Escher never-ending line of rooms and went, not for me. I need to be self-sustained, relaxed, and I need to, like, have a life.
That's awesome.
So it's always kind of been my goal to marry success with a sort of sense of reality and relaxed kind of being in the moment. And so that's why I speak the way I do. That's why you know, I work at being relaxed. Let's put it that way.
Well, you do a good job of man. And
thank you.
Thanks so much. And good luck with everything coming up. All right. Chris Berlew, everybody. Chris Berlew.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to talk to cuz.
It'd be great if you guys were like separated and he did that and you did this.
Yeah. Oh, I should have done that, huh?
Dad's like, I kept the wrong one. Yeah. I kept the wrong one. I had the option.
Yeah. Dad, I think telecom will get up there one day.
Yeah. I kept the wrong baby. But before we go on.
Oh.
Huh? Wait a minute.
What's going on,
Wait
Scott?
A minute. Oh, this must bring us to an all new thing on the Verbal Shenanigans show.
Oh.
Where we are teaming up with my good friends at Trivia Revolution, which Great is one sponsor. Of the sponsors. Now, each week on the show, or as long as this lasts, so if you guys want to participate, please do so.
Yeah.
We're going to be asking you a trivia question. If you tweet to @VSComedy and @TriviaRevolution.
Make sure it's both of them.
Yep. You got to tweet to both of them. We'll put you in a pool. We'll pick it out, and you can win, like, brewery gift cards. You can win prizes to all sorts of things, New Jersey beer related. So even if you're not in New Jersey, you could win, I guess. Oh. Damn it.
Welcome to Enter
Motion. Okay, good. But so this is the trivia question of the week. All right. Victor Wooten was a recent guest on the podcast, legendary bass player, played for Bill Fleck and the Flecktones, a lot of other things. Your question is the Trivia Revolution Verbal Shenanigans question is, what brand of bass does Victor Wooten play? Mm-hmm. What brand of bass does Victor Wooten play? Tweet the answers to @VSComedy and @TriviaRevolution, and you could win a prize to maybe even some of our other brewery sponsors.
Yeah.
What brand of bass does Victor Wooten play?
Bass guitar.
Yeah, yeah. So
do I get the certificate?
That is the question.
Mm.
But yeah, so that's something new we're going to try and do and whatnot. So.
Always like incorporating our sponsors with us.
We have the best sponsors, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes the sponsors great is that it's I guess you could say entrepreneurs and small business, and it's better than having Coca-Cola sponsor the podcast. Then again, if Coke, you want to sponsor the podcast for...
I know they're in Georgia right now listening in. They're like, aww.
But it's better because like you can do collaborative type of things like this and work on something and talk and come up with things that might benefit each other. So we are very happy to have all five sponsors of the podcast. But we have a show today with two guests. So I think it's important that we get to the second guest here, and then we'll talk a little bit afterwards and get out of here. So Berlew, this podcast was all you. You reached out to this guy. It's funny. You told us we interviewed him a little bit before, so we're kind of interested. But you told us the story of.
I'm not sure if we recorded it or not.
Well, if not, we might have it twice.
It was one of those things where when we were just starting doing the podcast and saying, "Hey, maybe we get some interesting guests on there." I got in contact
with them. Back in the day when Doug Max was our interesting guest.
No matter what you say about us, we improved in that category. I have to say that.
That's the one category we got down.
We keep going down everywhere else, but this one,
we got it.
Yeah. So I actually contacted them back in 2015 that they were interested, and they got us a hold of our guest tonight, Mike Holstein. He's like, yeah, I'd be interested in doing it. And it kind of got lost in the shuffle. We were still trying to figure out stuff. We were changing days on when we were recording and stuff like that. So out of the blue, as I was looking through my email, I'm like, oh, damn, I never got back to this guy. So he's on tonight. Mike Holstein, he works for Green Bank Observatory. It's in
it's a bank, right?
No, that's the name of the city, Green Bank. And it's based out of West Virginia, and they are a radio astronomy telescope who baits. That's what they are.
Bill Nye's got a show coming out Thursday. They are.
Yeah, they got the science with the chromosomes and the neurons, and that's what they do.
But to tell the audience what's interesting about the,
what's interesting about the area, they are in a what's called a quiet zone, where it is legal to have Wi-Fi or cellular signals in the
cellular signals. Singles.
Yeah. It's a baseball team.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, any kind of Wi-Fi cell is out of the realm of possibility in that area. So we're talking to him about what Green Bank Observatory does scientifically. And on the social front, what's it like to basically not be able to use your cell phone?
All right, here we go. So we've gone to, we've called, last week we called...
An island?
An island. We called over somewhere in the United Kingdom. I can't remember exactly where offhand. And now we're going to a very scary place,
West Virginia,
which is probably the scariest of them all. But
based on the movie Wrong Turn.
All right, well, let's... there hey, Obi. You can just leave that open.
Yep.
I'll call him in a second. All right. Well, let's call Mike Holstein.
Hello.
Hey, is this Mike Holstein?
It is.
Did I say that correctly? Is it Holstein or Holstein?
It is. No, it is Holstein.
Well, see, right. That's why I'm a professional. That's why.
When did you start?
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Who?
No one yet, but we're getting there. Mike, welcome to the show. This is Scott Brennan here, and this is Mike.
How's it going, Mike?
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Well. It's beautiful out. It's like a nice.
It is beautiful.
It's like a nice 65 degrees probably right now. Maybe even a little cooler at this point, but it's beautiful and sunny and the sun's shining and we're podcasting and having a nice drink and talking to you.
Okay.
So, Mike, we've called a lot of scary places, but today we call West Virginia.
Yeah.
No. But so where are you actually calling us from at this point?
I guess so we're calling you. I am in a little town called Frost, West Virginia, which is just south of Green Bank.
Okay. And so you are, what is your position at this? We call it the observatory, correct? National Radio Astronomy Observatory.
Well, actually, we're the Green Bank Observatory now.
Okay. Okay. So that's the old name.
We're sort of separated from the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. We are now the Green Bank Observatory, our own facility. And I professionally, I'm an engineer, but I am the business manager for the facility, responsible for the operation and maintenance of the facility so that the scientific work can get done.
And can you tell us a little bit about radio astronomy? How does it differ from other types of astronomy?
No, it's a great question. So, no matter what we're doing. Yeah.
He's like, I don't really know. I just show up.
So astronomy, whether you're doing optical astronomy or radio astronomy, you are detecting the electromagnetic waves that are coming from the universe. And fortunately, the majority of us are born with receivers to detect the electromagnetic spectrum in the optical range, which are our eyes.
Right.
So, but if you think about the entire electromagnetic spectrum that exists, and let's say the optical spectrum is on a scale of about the size of an old-style car radio dial that you used to have to, you know, run the little line back and forth. The electromagnetic spectrum would be a radio dial 2 miles long. That's how much additional information is out there if you can find a way to detect it.
Okay.
So, yeah, so radio astronomy.
Hold our hand here, built, please. Hold. Proceed with caution.
So radio astronomy builds instruments and receivers that can detect the electromagnetic spectrum that's being emitted throughout the universe in the radio spectrum, with radio waves. And then we can convert that information into something that we can see with our optical receptors, our eyes.
So this is kind of like a radar of some sorts for the universe.
Yeah, in a way, that's right. I mean, radar actually operates in the radio part of the spectrum. And, you know, we learned to build detectors for radar back in, you know, World War II. And actually, that's sort of, you know, radio astronomy is a very young science, comparatively speaking. The first person to ever detect radio waves coming from space did so just in like 1932. It was pretty not that long ago, to be honest. And name was Carl Jansky. He was working for Bell Labs, and Bell was doing some work with wireless communications at the time, and they kept getting a lot of static in their equipment. And so they hired this guy. He was an electronics engineer, and they said, you know, we'd like to figure out where the static's coming from. So he built this antenna, kind of looks like the looks like the Wright brothers airplane, to be honest with you. Doesn't look like a telescope at all. And he started doing searches. It would go around in a circle, and he ended up figuring out that this static built up and basically changed by about 4 minutes every day, and was able to conclude that it was it coincided with the rise and the fall of the Milky Way in our sky. And so he concluded that the Milky Way galaxy, the one that we're in, the center of the Milky Way was emitting radio waves, and that was causing the static. And so Bell Labs said, great, at least you figured that out. And they moved on to other things. He moved on to other things. But he is considered the discoverer of radio waves from outer space.
I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, like, it's amazing sometimes to me if you just, like, take a step back, you know, scientifically wise, just how new so many sciences are, like, in terms of human history. Like, so many of them are under 100 years old. Many are under 20 years old, even, you know. So you know, like, I always think about, like, you know, thousands of years from now, when they turn back to the history books from like 1900 to whatever, you know, whatever, 2100, 2200, it's going to be an amazingly dense, like, well, there probably won't be books, but, you know, the Wikipedia is going to be really long.
The encyclopedias that they have in the future are going to be so huge. You're going to need like a whole room just for those.
No, but,
yeah, I mean, exactly.
So, I mean, I hear this radio, what you're talking about. You're getting readings on energy from things. Is that correct? Like readings from not only like humans, but I guess living things, or is it just all sorts of stuff?
It's all sorts of stuff. Basically, every organic molecule, every organic molecule radiates. You know, the vibration of the molecule, the vibration of the atoms within the molecule gives off electromagnetic signature. You know, if we looked at the sun in the radio spectrum, you'd get a large bandwidth readout, of the sun beyond what we can see. And so the planets radiate. They're not very sexy, just kind of bland as far as radio goes. But what gets really sexy is when you start looking at things like molecules in space that may have some real importance. You know, can you find organic molecules?
Right.
Can you find things that, let's say, are the building blocks of life as we know it? And it turns out that here in Green Bank, we have discovered that. We've discovered what are called prebiotic molecules, Jeez. The basic sugars that make up the building blocks of life. And they're everywhere in space. They're not, limited to just one region or one area. We've found them in abundance. So, that's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing you talk, it's like hard to even narrow down like one question. You can go off on a tangent on any of these things. But what is like the ultimate, like what are you guys looking for? And how do you plan on using this information? Like, what is there like a steps in process, like a procedure you're planning to use with this information? Or is it all right now just gathering whatever you can?
Yeah,
it's probably a super broad
question,
too. You're
absolutely right. there's so much to do with the data out there that you can do. It's a multitude of things. It's not really one thing. The data, to get to the end of the question first, the data has been freely available. It's called, it's what we call an open skies policy. So if an astronomer from anywhere in the world uses the telescope to search for whatever it is they're wanting to do, then that data is also available to any other scientist for them to utilize in maybe a particular fashion that they want to. So what we end up with is four or five or six sort of basic types of experiment. There's cosmology, which people are looking for how the universe came to be and what the universe is doing.
There's cosmetology.
Yeah, that's right, which is
mascara works very weird on
exactly
Saturn.
Exactly what that hair on So there are astronomers who are looking back to just milliseconds after the Big Bang.
Jeez.
trying to detect what's called the epoch of reionization. It's when all of that energy first became.
Uh-oh. Call failure. That's okay. Just call him right back.
Must be on a cell.
Wi-Fi calling settings. User is busy.
He's still on the other side explaining the entire universe right now.
Yeah, I know. He'll get the hint eventually when he's just like, and that's the Big Bang Theory explained to a T. No one's heard that yet. Yeah, that was the first time on air.
We actually called the TV show The Big Bang Theory and tried to put it on there.
It'd be funny if, like, right now the government's, like, listening and then they're, like, shutting this thing down.
Shut it down. Bannon.
Press 9 to be put on the do not call list.
I want to be on the call list.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
This is an awkward situation.
Mike, come back to us. Use your
Use your big telescope to...
Hello?
Hey, we lost you.
Yeah, we got cut off somehow.
I said that was ironic. You probably just explained like the Big Bang Theory in like for the first time human ears have ever... and you were like going on and on and on, and it just completely cut off. Yeah. Or like the government like doesn't want us to hear what you were about to say.
Yeah, I apparently went into too much detail, and that was.
Don't look at your window, Mike. Be careful.
That's right.
But I guess when it cut off, you were just talking about. I'm trying to think.
They were examining the Big Bang Theory.
Right, yeah. They were like examining seconds in the bank up to the milliseconds after the Big Bang Theory, and that's kind of where we lost you.
Yeah, okay. So, so you know, it's when all of that energy first created, you know, an atom. You know, the first electron attached to an atom, it became, you know, hydrogen. And then... when maybe the second electron attached to a hydrogen atom and became helium. Well, that is the epoch of reionization. That's when things first started to accumulate into matter as we know it.
Wow.
And so one of the things that some scientists are doing are looking for the very telltale signs of when that occurred. It sort of leads me to one of the other general uses of, for instance, radio astronomy, and that's that the universe is just a terrific physics lab. Everything that we can try to think of to study here on Earth is already happening in space. So if we can find a way to detect that, then we don't have to build a super collider here on Earth to try to find, you know, to replicate something that we already know is happening there. So a lot of experiments have to do with testing the limits of physics and testing the theory of relativity, for instance, which we've done with the GBT as well and proven it within 5% of Einstein's theory. So he was kind of a smart cookie.
there's so many ways. Like, so now this Green Bank Observatory, is this publicly funded? Was it government funded? Who put this all together? And you said you are an engineer, I guess. I don't know if you say during the day or whatnot, but do you do this as a side job? Do you do this purely out of love? Like what is, how does this Green Bank Observatory work?
So it's interesting. And I can really bore you with these details, so you stop me whenever you want.
It's either that or I'll talk, so you might as well do it.
either that or we'll hang up again. I mean, lose the call.
Yeah, exactly. Pull the plug. So we kind of talked about, you know, how technology changed, you know, during the war, World War II. And right after Jansky discovered radio waves were coming from space, there was an electrical engineer named Grote Reber, who in the late 30s actually built the very first radio telescope in his backyard in Wheaton, Illinois, outside of Chicago. And he wanted to do some more studies. He wanted to map it and did so. He did that plus a lot of other things during his life. But for the United States, things really slowed down because of World War II. And after the war, England and Australia basically ramped up studies in radio astronomy, and the U.S. sort of fell behind. So in the mid-50s, the National Science Foundation had been formed about 4 or 5 years before, but they met with a consortium of colleges and universities that had formed a nonprofit organization called Associated Universities Incorporated, and decided that if the U.S. was going to stay was going to stay in the forefront of radio astronomy research, no single university could afford to build the instruments necessary to do the work. So we needed a national radio astronomy observatory. And that facility would build the instruments and build the receivers, and any university or any astronomer anywhere could use them for nothing. And so that's how NRAO got started. And they started looking for a place to put this observatory. And they had a bunch of criteria. One of the main ones was that it had to be a relatively radio quiet area, which meant that you couldn't have a lot of people around because people tend to make a lot of noise.
That's true.
Yeah. So
that's been confirmed.
Out of all these places, they ended up shortlisting like 29 sites in the eastern United States, and Green Bank, West Virginia was chosen to be the site of the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, like this is how I found out about the place, was reading an article how it's a quiet zone and there's no cell reception, there's no Wi-Fi. I mean, I know from a scientific point it's very essential, but how annoying is it when every visitor comes by and starts screaming about how they can't put a Facebook post up or something like that in your area?
Yeah, and you didn't get back to us quick enough. We're assuming that you didn't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. It is interesting because, you know, we sort of say, you know, welcome to the 50s when you come to Green Bank. It is critical. It was critical at the time, and it's super critical now. You know, as I said, Green Bank was chosen because there wasn't big industry. It's a very rural area. Matter of fact, it's the least populated county east of the Mississippi River. And doesn't have things like high-tension power lines overhead because those radiate. And, there were a bunch of things that went into the decision. But in order to protect that, there are actually two quiet zones. And a lot of people don't know about the second. In 1956, the state of West Virginia created the West Virginia Radio Astronomy Zone. And so by law, within a 10-mile radius of any radio astronomy facility, there is a limit on electrical radiation. And so that could be anything. It could be, an electric fence around someone's garden, you know, that's acting up. Or, wow. Of course, back at that time, it could be electric motors or an electric stove that's arcing or something like that. And then in 1957, 1958, Congress created the National Radio Quiet Zone, which is the one that most people are familiar with. And it's a much larger area. It's 13,000 square miles. Ooh. So it's as big as the states of Massachusetts and Connecticut combined. Yeah.
But it
particularly governs fixed based licensed transmitters. So, you know, back in the 50s when it was created, those were things like, you know, TV stations or radio stations or a radar installation at an airport that had to have an FCC license to operate. And that quiet zone was centered between us and Green Bank. And there was a naval research facility at Sugar Grove, West Virginia, which is about an hour and a half drive to our northeast. And it was to protect Sugar Grove as well. So certainly in the 50s, there weren't things like cell phones. But as technologies increased, cell phone use certainly has, increased. When cell phones came about, to give you an idea of the difference between the two zones, the cell tower would be governed by the National Radio Quiet Zone because it requires a license to operate. your handset, the actual cell phone in your hand, would be governed by the West Virginia radio astronomy zone, because it's not a fixed based unit, but it still has an electrical signature that may violate the requirements of the zone.
Oh. I mean, that's just, there's way more I want to ask you, but I want to ask you something. There's something you touched on there, like, so the one quiet zone was funded by Congress and the government and whatnot. So obviously what you guys are doing is, there must be some kind of importance to it. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any reason to keep you guys open or even, you know, have a zone for that. So you must be doing important work. But I wanted to ask you, you know, regardless of what way people swing or whatnot, in this last election or whatnot, we basically didn't hear a word about science in, you know, not a word about science at all, really, or the environment or space or astronomy or really anything, you know.
Right.
Regardless of whose opinion, what way, you know, or the debates were not even close. It was never even, like, really brought up. Now, with like, this current administration, whatnot, do you guys have any fear of being shut down or not paid attention to? And also, like, where do you guys see the Green Bank Observatory moving forward? Like, what are we working on here?
Wow. So really, really good. You actually hit on something that we're struggling with, but not because of this administration, believe it or not.
Right, right.
Yeah. So the facility is owned by the government. The National Science Foundation owns the property and owns all of the equipment. But no one there has ever been a government employee. We are all employed by Associated Universities Incorporated. And so we're employed by a nonprofit organization.
Okay.
To operate and manage it for the government. And historically, 98% or so, even up to 100% of our funding has come from Congress.
Wow.
They give money, yeah, to the National Science Foundation, and the National Science Foundation filters it down through all of their groups, and math and physical sciences contains astronomy, which contains then optical and radio astronomy. So eventually money trickles down and radio astronomy is funded. And since we are the only national radio astronomy observatory, or at least we were at the time, then most of the radio astronomy money came to NREO. NREO has since expanded, but and we have a site in Socorro, New Mexico.
Okay.
Which, if you've seen the movie Contact, that's our sister site that's in that movie.
Hmm.
But recently, I'm talking the last 10, 12 years, we've also built a huge array down in Chile in South America called ALMA. Well, with the construction of huge projects like ALMA, which was a multinational project, in 2012, NSF formed a committee to look at all of their facilities and determine whether or not they should keep funding them. Because it's with the same budget, it's hard to bring new facilities online and still fund all of your older ones. And they recommended that they quit funding Green Bank.
Wow.
The GBT. Yeah. So we sort of went in through a process that we're actually still going through, but that's part of the reason that we are no longer associated with NRAO directly. We are our own facility that we inaugurated in October of last year.
Okay.
Called the Green Bank Observatory. Yeah, so we are finding our own sources of funds on top of whatever NSF decides to give us from organizations or institutions that really want the use of the telescope. And it's actually been a pretty great thing. NSF has cooperated really well. It's clear that they don't want to shut us down, would like to see us stay open. And so they've agreed to fund us partially. We don't know how much for sure yet. But this year it's like 65% of what they used to fund us.
Okay.
And we have groups that have come in, particularly the Breakthrough Listen Group, if you've heard of that. It's the largest expenditure of funds over 10 years, specifically for the search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
Yeah. And the GBT is the only telescope in the Northern Hemisphere that's doing that work.
Mike, I don't want. Actually, I'm gonna ask my Mike. He's mm-hmm. he's mine. He's mine. But
hey.
no, I'm gonna ask Mike if you don't mind. I would like to schedule a follow up interview with you because I have a whole lot more questions. And what you're talking about is like insanely fascinating to me. Like the other day, I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson on a Rogan podcast, and like what he was talking about, I couldn't even wrap my brain around. I feel like you're touching on a lot of the same things that he was, but our time is kind of bumped up against the hour here. So if you're down with that, I'd like to do that. And also, if people want to go check out the Green Bank Observatory and get some information on it and check out what you guys are all about, where can they go?
They can go to www.greenbankobservatory.org, O-R-G. And our website's up, and we're still building it, but it's got a lot of great information on it. And and come and visit us. I know it's not sort of on your way to any other place.
If you're going to Disneyland. <That's
right. laughs> I know it's in the middle of nowhere. You can't use your GPS to get there.
Exactly. But, you know, if you head to Wally World, stop by Green Bay.
Mike, thanks so much, man. Like I said, I would love to talk to you again soon.
I'm all for it. Just let me know.
All right. Awesome. Thanks so much, Mike, and take care and good luck with everything.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Thank you, sir. You guys have fun.
Take Bye-bye. Care.
Bye.
Really fascinating stuff there.
Yeah. What's really weird was I was basically how I got back in touch with them. Remember when we really started and we're like, let's try to find weird guests?
Yeah.
So they kind of said yes in 2015.
Wow.
And I kind of forgot because we were in the middle of, what are we? And trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then as we were kind of getting back to, let's just find anything interesting or whatever, I'm like,
super.
Oh, yeah, that was that thing.
Right up my alley. Like, I love that kind of stuff.
That was
it's
awesome
funny
talk.
Because, like the Wi-Fi and all, we barely even got into that because he just was talking about so much other like mm-hmm. interesting things.
Science. Yeah,
but
that's the name of the episode. Science.
That's fine. But all right, we'll be right back. All right, that was like I can go forever with a guy like that. Like,
yeah,
because it's just like. My brain is like here, you know, and I'm putting like my hand by my nose.
It's by
my
shoulders, ladies yeah. and gentlemen.
His brain is like ceiling. Oh. Like he knows.
That's like 5 feet, everybody.
That's what I was like telling him, like, the walk us through this. Like, don't start getting to eons and zephyrs and a million things like that. But really, really, really good interview. I think we're going to try to get him back on quicker, definitely. Sooner than later.
Definitely.
We do a lot of things where we're like, let's get him back on. It's like a year later. I think we're going to bring him back on kind of quick because I have a lot more I'd like to ask him.
And there's some guests we're going to wait about 4 or 5 years before we even get desperate enough.
Yeah, just tune into last week's episode. No, I mean...
the first part, not sick. Yeah. Somebody honked a horn.
Who honks a horn?
Yeah, I do from occasion to occasion. I mean, are we supposed to go outside or should we still podcast?
Do they have like a cake for us?
Is this like a fire drill?
House is on fire. we got to get this guest in.
Yeah, the firefighters just walked by. Oh, yeah, there's a fire. Might want to get out of there. Let's do a job.
But,
wait, is that Berlew in there? Us firefighters hate him.
Let them burn. But yeah, I mean, like, I guess before we get out of here, a lot of kind of crazy things going on. The Facebook killer guy today, like, You saw that guy.
Yeah,
right?
he offed himself today.
Yeah, I mean, a real manly guy, he offed himself. Like, why couldn't he just shoot himself before he had to go kill somebody?
Yeah.
Or 13, whatever it is. You know, it's like, I guess it was a matter of time before someone used a live feature to do something heinous, but it's like, I don't know, it's just so, like, I just think we're doomed, man. We're doomed where we are just, we're going to be holding these devices on our, like, we're going to be putting them in our pockets on our shirts, and we're just going to be streaming live all day long. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is a long, like, ploy by, like, the government to secretly, like, no, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but maybe this is like a ploy, like where basically they could just tap into you, like, oh, what's Berlo doing? Boop. What's Scott doing? Boop. You know, and like it just.
I see it coming with the microchips. Eventually, everybody's like, well, you know, it works for animals. I'm sure it's going to get trendy with humans.
A guy at school has a thing on his kid's phone where he can just track where he is. I'm like, he's like, yeah, I got this thing. I track where my son is. Like, but I'm like, oh God! Like, and this is why kids are going to be the way they are. They're basically on house arrest all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whereas my life was going as far as I possibly could to get away from my do whatever I wasn't supposed to do on my bike, and my mom would say, "Be back in 35 minutes," and it would be like pedaling back as quick as possible. Okay. And she'd be like, "Okay, you're allowed to go back out." But knowing where the kid is, and I think it's like an invasion of privacy, even as a kid. It's too much.
In our day, it was, something can happen, but what are the odds? Nowadays, it can happen. Screw the odds.
No, see, like, I don't believe that at all. Like, child molesters, everyone's got a cell phone now. You just ping the cell phone, and we know where they are. Like, back in my day, child molesters, like, you knew who the weirdo was. You just stayed away from them.
Yeah.
You learned a little bit of street smarts. I mean, I don't know. I think we're going in a bad... But, well, it's funny because, like, what I wanted to talk about, like, just for a second was, like, sometimes I feel like I'm too much phone. Too much phone, man.
I get that.
So
I hear from the lady a lot, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, my girlfriend, me...
Well, you dropped your cell phone, so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
My girlfriend, me, everybody. Everybody, yeah. And I'm guilty of it. You're guilty of it. We all are. Mm-hmm. We just check it. We just check. What the frick are we checking it for? For a like, a little thumbs up on social media, where, or an email. Like, sometimes I think I'm getting sucked way too far into it. Like, where I'm checking it while I'm driving. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing? What is so important? And it's like I want to give up like a lot of like. My addiction. Like, I wish I could just, like, even
just
move
to Green Bank.
No, it'd be kind of cool if you put, like, a usage limit on your cell phone, right? And when you used it too much, it transferred you over to, like, a flip phone for a week. And then, like...
No. Well...
Yeah, Monday, your phone will be reactivated again. Like, you overused your... Like, you're personally using your data limit, but not through the company. You're personally doing it. It's not a bad idea. Yeah. Phone limiter.
Cell phone SWAT team.
Yeah. But I think we're just so... I mean, the Facebook, the videos, the things people put out there. I'm just like...
If you really dive in...
You think I care? This is what shows you I don't care about your live video. A guy was murdering people on Facebook Live, and they still couldn't figure out where he was. No one watches your Facebook Live video. You know, like...
Hey, check it!
Yeah. Where you at? You know,
hashtag something.
No one checks your Facebook Live video. There's a murderer shooting people in the head, and they don't know where he is because he had probably, like, two videos. If there was, like, 100 people giving him those little hearts, maybe he wouldn't have done it.
Uh-oh, the police are on to me. I get angry faces.
You know, I was going to shoot this guy, but the last person sent me that big red heart that floated across the screen, and I feel okay, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, God, the freaking guy. Imagine being that guy's family. Or him, even, you know, like him, obviously. But the guy family, some fucking psychopath that wants to go live with killing people. It's disgusting.
There's no restraint. I mean, there's no valor even in the crime. You know? I mean, it used to be, you're gonna, if somebody did it, it's like, well, I don't want to be public. I don't, have some kind of reform, if you will, you know, some respect for whatever. But now it's just like, I'm pissed off, and now I want the whole world to see what I'm doing to you.
Here's the thing. If you guys are feeling lonely and you're out there, this is a PSA. If you're feeling lonely, you're out there, and you need help, but you want to kill somebody, like you have the urge to kill somebody, kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot yourself before you freaking. Why do you got to go and take other people's lives before you go in? What, because you're going to get in trouble? There's no trouble in killing yourself. Like, remember Louis the other day?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, just kill yourself. You got an excuse to get out of everything, but it's just...
Jury duty? Fuck no, I'm going to kill myself.
It's just so sad, man. Like, someone lost their life because that guy couldn't deal with his everyday thing. I saw some Twitter thing or some article, like, he was outed as, like, a gay man by his ex or something like that. Now... it could be completely wrong or completely false. And that goes into a million different things, like, why is that such a bad thing and all that. The point is, whatever you're feeling, if you feel the need to kill people and you're on the verge of suicide, suicide should be 1A on the checklist. 1B should be killing people. Kill yourself.
Yeah.
That might have been a little harsh.
Yeah. Might 1C, maybe, like, go see a movie and then think about it.
Yeah, think about it. Go see a therapist,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, yeah, it's pretty sad. I mean, I don't know.
It's the world we live in, unfortunately.
I mean, before I get out of here, you got anything else? I know we're talking about killing each other.
I wanted to talk about a little bit Starling Marte. The Pirates,
yes.
Who got,
I didn't draft him, so I'm okay.
Yeah, he got suspended for 80 games for violating the policy. Now, for what I'm hearing more and more, it's sounding like he took something over the counter, and they got the drug test, and it's like, no, there's like an opiate or something in there. Nope, gotta suspend you for 80 games. It's getting so weird now, baseball. I mean, it's kind of funny. It went from, no, we don't care. We don't even care if the government's mad at us. We don't care. Now it's, if you take an ibuprofen while checking with your team manager and their medical staff, you can end up losing half your paycheck now.
I mean, it's also like baseball is just complete hypocrites. Because what's popular now is get them for everything, where... Mm-hmm. Baseball was carried by drug addicts for 20, 30 years. It went from greenies and opiates and to steroids, and we all turned a blind eye to it until the
Let's
new
go
story
all the way
started.
Back to the 20s when they were drinking every night and they were smoking and they were the worst people on the planet. Ty Cobb is one of the biggest a-holes on the planet. And now they never cared. Then all of a sudden it's like,
they didn't let blacks into the league for years. Like, they're just, all it is them catching up. Like, now we're going to overdo it and stuff like that. And I do feel like you do find a lot of these, like, Spanish and Latin country guys getting busted for things. And I do wonder if it's an over-the-counter, like, language barrier kind of thing where this is in it or they don't have someone advising them.
Well, also a lot of times is they'll go play, like, ball in their local country over the winter and they don't have, like, MLB there and they'll just take whatever local there and God knows what's down there. And
I mean, like, it comes to a point where, like, MLB or sports organizations have to do a better job of, here is 100% the list that you can take. If you take anything off this list, you're getting suspended. Mm-hmm. This is it. Here are the 100 things you're allowed to take. None of this gray area. None of this, like, oh, maybe there's something in it. Here are the things you are allowed to take, governed by MLB. Not governed by, like, any other, like, medical field or something. Here mm-hmm. are what you're allowed to take at baseball. This will make you strong. This is a protein. This is a – but these guys are going out and they're figuring things out. And but it, and it's something in that thing that gets them caught or flagged. And it's like,
and there's all the weird rules. Like, the for a while they said, well, Adderall's illegal. Then they said, well, if you get a prescription, Adderall's okay. And then they said like 100-some baseball players ended up with ADD.
The greatest team in my my fandom history is the 86 Mets. They were a team of drug addicts. Mm-hmm. They were a team of methamphetamine users, coke addicts, drinkers, everything, steroids before like it really became popular. Kevin McReynolds literally left the game in the before he got called to pinch hit, and he couldn't pinch hit because he was out on the streets scoring.
I didn't ever heard that story.
Yeah. And it's just, we are all hypocrites. We all come down on these sports guys like, blah, 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 smoked weed. Like, are we still yelling at people about weed?
Mm-hmm.
Blah, 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 smoked crack. He's a 26-year-old kid with every dollar to his name. And, like, let's give a little bit of forgiveness and some understanding, because we all have these massive skeletons in our closet. Like, I don't know. It just drives me crazy. Like, blah, 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 did weed. It's a performance enhancer.
Nobody has... Yeah. Improve their performance with weed.
Yeah. So LeBron smokes a joint, he can't dunk anymore. Yeah. I just don't see that happening.
The only thing weed improves on is TV marathon running.
Yeah,
that's it.
And inflammation, but there are a lot of like inflammation and pain. Like we don't consider that. Like we're like, I'm not a weed smoker. I don't think you're a weed smoker. I'm like. Yeah. Like, these are guys who are putting their bodies out there, 82, 162 games in baseball. If they want to smoke a little weed, like, these guys are pushing their bodies all the time, whether or not, you know, it's extreme, like basketball and hockey and stuff like that, or baseball, where it's just more of a grinding kind of thing. They want to smoke a little weed to alleviate some pain or have fun. God, but it's a plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plant. They're not doing like steroids is a different thing where, yeah, it did make you bigger, faster, stronger. We never made anyone hit home runs.
No.
I don't know.
And the funniest thing of all this, the one guy who's really blacklisted in all this, Jose Canseco, who basically told everybody, hey, this is what's going on.
I just think we're a nation of hypocrites. When someone gets in trouble, we love to come down on them and smash them and just ruin their careers. And like, what was that girl from the Food Network? That old lady?
Oh,
Paula Deen. Yeah. She said the N-word in 1978. Blah 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 blah. Let's get her job, because America is only happy when we take people's jobs away and their livelihood. How about? Hey, yeah, you know, like I said it, I've learned since that it's a bad word. You know, hey, I'm throwing out there, I didn't think, when I was in high school, I didn't think gay marriage was like a good thing. I was against it. Like, I didn't really understand it. I mean, look at this show now. We have, you know, people call in and check in with us about transition and stuff. And I, you know, the problem with people is no one's allowed to change their opinion. It's the same thing, like these Trump supporters, they're just wackos, and they can't admit that, hey, maybe that was the wrong decision.
Mm.
Obama, the first 4 years of Obama, I was embarrassed. I voted for him. He was awful. He was terrible. Mm. But you have to look yourself in the mirror and admit, like, yeah, I was only allowed to vote for two people. Maybe this was wrong. You know?
True.
And everyone's got to be so self-righteous and blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. Let's get out of here.
All right.
We had a good podcast. I don't know why I want to get down a downer point. Perlo, anything to promote?
I will promote something that our former guest is promoting. Captain Bayonne. They are asking for help to clean up the Bayonne area. Mayor Davis of Bayonne, New Jersey, is requesting it. If anybody's interested, they're doing it on Saturday, April 22nd, between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. For any information and register, please contact Alicia Lasansi by phone at 201-858-6109 or by email at alosonczy at bayng.org.
Wow. Really easy email address. Or Google it. Just Google it.
Yeah. Or go on Captain Bayonne's Facebook page. Facebook.com/Captain Bayonne.
There you go.
With the details.
Yeah. I mean, that email address couldn't be harder to remember.
I'm trying to help. It's not my fault.
I'm not blaming you. I'm saying.
Well, usually you do.
No, but I got a lot to promote. I got a couple things to promote. I got a lot of Verbal Shenanigans shows coming up.
Ew.
Okay, there's a whole bunch of different things. Next week, Thursday, is the Tap House 15 show. Headliner Seymour Swan, bunch of other funny comics. It's probably sold out, but give them a call. You might be able to get some free seats because it's free. But then on May 13th, we are back at the Brook Hollow Winery.
Nice.
It took a while to get this to come together. We're throwing a bunch of dates around and things that didn't work, but we put something together pretty quickly. So headliner is Mike Morris.
Ah, very nice.
Who crushed Table 42 the other night. And then Ritu Chandra and Mike Ciccoli are on the show. And I'm going to be hosting that one. Well, let's keep it at that. To keep it short and sweet. I guess that's it. What you guys can do for us. There's a lot you can do for us. Now, this is a long episode, but it's worth it. Exactly.
Besides, this is at the end, so you already listened to it.
Yeah. I mean, if you made it this far, you're listening. But the best thing you can do is share this. I always ask people to leave reviews. I know it gets extreme, but if you could just share it, just say, "Hey, we heard this on Laughable or iTunes or Stitcher. This is a very good podcast." It doesn't have to be funny. Just say, "Hey, there's a very good guest." And also go back and listen to the old episodes. There's so many amazing guests that I feel like they get lost in the shuffle. And I guess that's really about it. And subscribe on Instagram at Verbal Shenanigans, on Twitter at VS Comedy. And I guess that's it. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Millions of podcasts. Podcasts for free. Millions of podcasts. Choose this one for me. I'm moving to the country. I'm gonna eat me a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country. I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country. I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Peaches come from a can. Yeah.